Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Grisha Watch. We are here with your first official episode of season two. Season two, episode one, No Shelter But Me. And you and I have just finished watching it. You, in this case, being you, Aaron. I'm looking at you. Nobody can see you. I have to introduce you.
Wow. I feel a little offended that nobody can see me.
Nobody can see you.
That just means I need to shine brighter.
You're so weird. Anyway, I, as always, am Emma Skies. I'm here with my co-host, Aaron. And we're here to tell you all about Shadow and Bone, Season 2, Episode 1.
Yes. Coming out the gate swinging.
You liked it? It was a good episode?
I did actually like it.
It's a good starter episode.
I will say, I think it's because of the new information on old characters and the introduction of new characters.
Okay.
I think that's why I like it. And now we have, I feel like X-Men-y with the six now.
Well, with the five.
Well, yeah, but you know what they're called. Because you never said they're like special.
Right.
Like, we got, you know, an assassin now. We have like a magician type of person. We have two of them basically with magic users, which I'm excited to learn more about.
We're going to get into that too.
Because that, can you hand me my phone over there? Because that is one of the
questions that you had.
Questions on my list for sure. So I need to know what that is all about. Because nothing like this, I don't feel like anything like this was stated in the first season, right?
So it was, if you're talking about Jesper, if we're jumping right into it,
okay.
At some point in the episode, and we will kind of go back for listeners and talk about, you know, kind of chronologically through the episode. But
yes.
In this case, he's asking about when it said that Jesper is a Durist. It's D-U-R-A-S-T, Durist, which is a form of magic user, as I said, a form of Grisha. And that is not stated in the first season. It was implied in a way that made me nervous, but the fact that you didn't pick up on it makes me feel better. Although now that's all out the window because they've just said it.
But did they show the concept of Durists in the first season?
They never said the word Durist. They never said anything about like
about
you
the,
had no reason
yeah,
to believe
so then,
there were like metal workers.
Yeah, yeah. So then, yeah, there would never be an idea.
But there's
that.
Very much the implication that Jesper and his marksmanship is something more than ordinary. In the way that they shot a couple of scenes in the first season, it's very much like no normal person could have made that shot that he just did or done what he just did with metal. And they kind of threw it in there in a way that made me really nervous. Because now that you know, we can just say Jesper's a Durist. You don't find that out for a very long time, as far as I remember, in Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
So like the fact that you're going into Six of Crows knowing that is very weird.
But I wouldn't think anything different. Well, I come from the land of Hawkeyes and Green Arrows. You can make shots like that,
right?
No problem. So it doesn't take magic. It's just
right. So in then you know you sit with this for a while, and then the finding out that he's a jurist does become something, and then he kind of like, you know, unlocks a few things that like, oh, now some things make sense. You know, maybe whatever. So
okay.
Yes, they're telling you straight up in the first episode of season two that Jesper is a Durist,
that's
which is
fine.
Not something you find out for quite some time.
But that's fine.
Well, it's fine for you because you don't know any different. Like, it's how you're being presented the information. But to book readers, it's a little bit of an interesting change.
Is it just because there's no buildup like there was?
Yeah, there's less of a buildup, which means it's less of a reveal, which means, because like that's a big deal. Because that also implies, like you said, the fact that you don't even know what a Durist is the first you're hearing about it. You already know that these things exist in the books. So to find out that, A, this thing that you already know exists, and he's one of them, that's like a bigger reveal. It's a whole thing.
So, I mean, not to continue to not go chronologically, but since we're already here.
You had another question.
Why did it seem like it was perceived like that it's a bad thing?
So remember the way that Grisha are treated.
Yeah, I get that. But, like, why would he...
He doesn't tell anybody.
No. Not him. Not because I understand why he wouldn't tell anybody, but... boss guy, the Kane.
Kaz.
Kaz. Why would Kaz seem to be a little irked about it?
I think Kaz is more irked that Jesper never told him. He has clearly already figured it out. He knows.
Yeah.
But Jesper never told him, which I think maybe grates on him a little bit. But he's not really irked about the fact that Jesper... I mean, it's useful. It's useful to him.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, yeah, it's fully useful. Like, having that ability is definitely useful, so.
Now that we've jumped, like, 90% of the way into the episode.
I mean, that was only, like, maybe 40.
We're going to take it back from the very beginning. And this is something that you'll hear me say a lot, potentially, as we're talking about this season. Siege and Storm is the second book in the series. It is, you know, what we kind of assumed season two is going to be based on. I don't like Siege and Storm. And this is going to come up probably multiple times. Aaron has heard me talk about this a lot. The book, nothing happens in this book. It is repetitive. It is circular. A lot of really convenient things happen in the beginning very quickly. And then it just becomes this stagnant nothing for about 300 pages before the end. I don't like the book. So when we head into this season, and we talked about this in the Welcome Back episode, the idea that they're going to mix Ruin and Rising into that, I think, is a very good thing. But as we talk about the things in the show that are different, I'm really curious to see if there are changes that I think make the story better and get rid of that ridiculously stagnant entire middle of Siege and Storm. And from, like, right out of the get-go, this is completely different from the book.
Right out of the what?
Right out of the get-go.
It sounded like you said gecko.
Wow.
And I was going to be like, that's not how that
right
goes.
Out of the gecko. I'm sticking with it.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. I want you to tell me, once we're past all of the nothingness of Siege and Storm in the show, I really want to know what nothing happens.
Right.
Is it just character development?
Siege and Storm ends up being largely a character study, which is something that I enjoy reading. I like reading a character study. It's the fact that it's so repetitive. You're getting the same circular thought processes over and over and over again. You're not getting any new information about it. It's kind of just hitting home the same information about the same three characters over and over and over again. And I'm like, why am I still here? So one of the things that I had told you, because I just reread this book last week, was that I could see if the show is trying to combine books two and three, you could probably do justice to book two in two, maybe three episodes, and you could do the entire book justice.
Okay.
You add in a couple time skips maybe in the middle of that because you want the passage of time, but, like, that's all you need. You just need a couple hours, and you're like, here's the important shit to know. Let's move on.
Have we gone a good
ways? We're not even through chapter one.
Really?
Oh, yeah, okay. Because of the way we're changing things. So right off the bat, we start with Alina and Maul. They're on the ship, and through some dialogue, we get the idea that they went to Kedderdam, and now they've left Kedderdam, left the crows, left everybody else, and they're on their way to, Mal says, Weddle, which is all the way up in Novia Zem. So in the book, they headed to a place called Coftin, which is much further south than Novia Zem, across the sea. So same concept. They crossed the sea to get the hell out of Ravka, and they're just finding their way through things. But all this, I mean, kind of everything that we get in here, this thing where they get into the country, they have to go through immigration, they have fake papers to try and get them in. None of that really happens in the book. The book starts, they've already been settled where they are for a couple of weeks. And, you know, in the show, they kind of walk into this really nice hotel room and they're like, oh, this is, you know, super great for us. They are staying in some rundown, rusted out, bedbug ridden hostel where the two of them are sharing a tiny twin bed. Alina is working at basically an agricultural job, picking Jurta every single day. So, like, she's covered in, like, Jurta pollen. So, it's like, she's got orange on her fingertips and in her eyebrows. And, like, Maul's been working some manual labor jobs. And they're just trying to get enough, because they've run out of money at this point. They just needed to settle here for enough time to get some more money to keep going to somewhere else.
So, the change in the book, where they're at now, or where they were in the first episode, is that pretty accurate to the description of the, like, it looks like a Caribbean type
no,
of
so
country.
No, so Novia Zem, where they are, is an entirely different country.
You know, I know, but I'm not saying, I'm saying when they, the whatever the description in the book is of the place that they were in the show,
oh, no.
Is it accurate? No. Oh, so they just kind of created this.
They just created, like, a whole new place, because you don't really ever go, as far as I know, in all six, all seven of the Grishaverse books, you never go to Novia Zem. You hear about it, you know of it, you know people from there, but I don't think you ever go to Novia Zem, so you never see it.
People from there?
Yes.
No, like, are there characters in the
book
from
there? Yeah, so there's characters
there?
In the book that are from there.
So can you, like, infer how that country is?
Some of the culture, some of
Yeah, okay.
As far as, if I remember correctly, most of the darker-skinned black characters are from Novia Zem.
Okay. That's what, because I'm like, I mean, they kind of...
Which I think is why they
fleshed
made
it
that,
out. Yeah, it seems like it was fleshed out to a degree where it's like, you guys would know what this is in the book. Like, hey, this is blah, blah, blah.
It's kind of one of those things that's interesting that you get to do in an adaptation where it's a place you never get to see. Like, you're reading the book and you're like, you know about this place and you're interested in this place, but you never actually got to see it. So we lose Coffton, which is this like nothing town that looks like everything else. Okay. You know, it looked like Ravka, it looked like everything else. And in exchange, what we get is seeing this place that we never got to see
before.
Then
I would welcome that change over.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like more of the same crap you've seen, or would you guys like to see this other place that won't really impact the story overall,
correct,
but you get to see more of the world. So yeah, okay, I like it.
So, and the other big change, okay, so we noticed this right away in the recap. So we're watching the recap. They added a line of dialogue in the recap that was not in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very much they spliced it into a line that we had already known was there. But in the recap, it specifically states that they are looking for the second amplifier.
Yes, and that
they, like, snuck that in. They're trying to gaslight you into thinking.
That gives more purpose, of course, to, like, the characters and stuff like that, which we didn't necessarily, like, okay, so we had a goal but no plan,
right?
So that's a wish, so that's all we had. And now with that little line of, hey, let's go gather the Dragon Balls and make this thing happen, that changes a lot more like that.
It gives them a little bit more agency in what they're doing.
And then it gives the viewer some type of focus. Like, right, okay, now I know where we're going here. This is what we got to do. So if things go awry or things go messed up, I'm like, okay, they've been thrown off the plan here. What are we going to do? Well, at least for Alina, excuse me. Mm. And Dull Boy. Yeah. No, I refuse to call him by his name. Jason Bourne.
One of the things that I meant to mention right at the top of the episode that I didn't, but I'm remembering now, so we're going to throw it in, is that I saw I think it was an Instagram story from Leigh Bardugo. So, of course, because it was an Instagram story, I can't go look it up again. Where she posted it like a week ago, and she was like, I feel like this is a really good time to remind everybody that the show and the book are two completely different entities, and that's a good thing. And I was like, she is buttering everybody up for the fact that it's going to be super different. Like, she knows that it's going to be really different, and she's like, I'm just here to remind you, it's not the books, it's
how,
not supposed
how
to be.
How aware do you think an author is of the reception of a book?
Of the reception of it? For the most part, so a lot of authors will stay away from reviews, but it's hard not to see, like, your, say, like, the average Goodreads rating. Yeah. You can generally see that. You get professional reviews. What a lot of things, as far as my knowledge goes, which is not very far, so take this with a grain of salt. I know agents will sometimes send authors like specific reviews. They're like, hey, here's a review from Kirkus, here's a review from the New York Times. Kind of cherry pick certain professional reviews and be like, here's this.
Well, I only ask because if...
Does she know that people didn't like the book?
Well, I mean, I don't know if your opinion on the book is
objectively correct.
It is objectively correct. I don't know this.
No, this is largely looked at as being the worst of the series.
Okay, so yeah. So then if it's... But is it like bad, or is it just like the worst grape on the bunch type of thing? Like, it's still a
grape.
It's
very much that.
Okay, so then that's why I'm saying, if she's buttering people up saying, hey, the book and the show are different, did she expect people to be like, well, where's my book too? Or is it just like, I know this is a bad one, so I changed it, guys?
I would be really curious if we skip a bunch of stuff in Siege and Storm, I would be very interested to see if anybody's actually upset about
that's
that.
That's what I want to know.
Like, what do we, like, I want to know, like, if anybody, I'd be like, what are we missing? Like, what did we not get by getting
rid of
this?
You got those purists. That are like, I want this happens and this happens. It's important to me.
Well, and what you and I were talking about last week when I was reading this is the idea that I think Siege and Storm, the Shadow and Bone as a whole, should have been a duology.
Okay.
I think it was probably, and this is, again, I'm going to get on my, like, this is complete conspiracy theory. I have nothing to back this up. This is just my understanding of the industry. At the time that these books were bought and sold as, like, for publication, it was the early 2010s, and trilogies were the thing. Everybody was doing trilogies. Uh-huh. Divergent, Hunger Games, like, that was the thing. Everybody was doing trilogies. And so it is not even a little bit of a surprise that this sold as a trilogy. So I understand why it was three books from a business perspective, because that's what they all were at that time. I think it should have been two. And I think it's very telling that the next two bits of this series, when she had probably more agency in what she was doing and she had proven that she had sales and she could kind of maybe make some more decisions with her publisher, the next two are both duologies. Six of Crows is a duology. King of Scars is a duology. It's what she's better at writing in the Grishaverse.
Well, like you said, this season should wrap up two books, so maybe this is the makeup for it.
I hope so.
A season duology.
I really am curious to see if this season is going to cover all of Ruin and Rising. Like, are we going to close out the Shadow and Bone trilogy here? And I guess you and I will find out, because it's all right in front of our faces. It's available to us right now.
Where were we, though?
Where were we? It's a great question. So, because they're standing in line at immigration.
Yes.
And they specifically say, we're going to find the Sea Whip. We're going to find the second amplifier.
And so I can't remember what those amplifiers, like, all are. I know there's, like, it looked like there were four.
I don't think it ever talked about what they were. No, it said, you knew the stag.
Yeah, one said different animals, but when they showed the picture of different animals, one looked like a skeleton hand. And I was like, that's not an animal, so what are we doing?
So there's, it's Morozova's amplifiers that they talked about in the first season in the first book. And what Maul says even in that line is, like, no Grisha has ever had two amplifiers. We don't know if this is going to kill you. We don't even know if all of these things exist. Like, this is all myth.
What would give reason to think that it would kill somebody, though? Because, like, she had one.
She had one. So Grisha only ever can have one amplifier. Like, that is the base foundational teaching. When you learn about amplifiers, when you learn about Grisha power, Grisha can have one amplifier and no more. And it's kind of one of those things that's been like that for hundreds of years. Nobody questions it. That's just the way it is. And it's like, if you go back far enough, why is that? Who really knows? We just know, we quote unquote know, that if you tried to get more, it would either destroy you or it would create an imbalance in Grisha power and in the world, and get you away from what they call the small science, the idea that Grisha power is just manipulating elements and manipulating atoms and on a cellular level, and into what they call Merzost, which is what we would think of as real quote-unquote magic, where you're making something from nothing.
Okay.
And that, like, rips the hole, and then you know what happens? The fold happens.
Yes.
So that's what they can kind of point to. Like, you want to fuck with Merzost? That's what you get.
Okay.
You create a thing that's going to fucking destroy the world. So we have it on, you know, we have it from their mouth right away that they're going for the Sea Whip. They're going for the second amplifier. Maul is worried it might kill her. But, like, we have that in hand, yeah, which is not something you have in the book. They're aware that they exist. They're aware that, you know, this is something that is in the world. Oh, they're aware of the myth that this is something in the world. But that's not, like, their goal.
So what's their goal in the book?
Live.
Just survive.
Trying to survive. So that this idea where you're giving them more agency in the show makes sense. Yeah. They're like, it would be boring if they're just like, all right, we're going to go from town to town and just settle somewhere.
I mean, I would think that in the book something rattles them out of their everyday life, of course. So, I mean, you could do the same thing here. It would just, like, they're going back and forth. The only thing I can think of is they kind of ruined it in the first season by saying that there are people after them, like, constantly after them, like the Six of Crows. In the Six of Crows world, there are people after them. So it's not like they can ever just rest anywhere for a long period of time, because they're
basically thinking, if we can get far enough away to where nobody knows us, we can just live.
Yeah.
And that's their plan. And the only reason they've stopped where they are for the last 2 weeks is because they ran out of money to keep going.
And see, in the book, it makes sense, because I'm guessing the only people are just the military, right? So, yeah, they're, and from the show, I'm getting that everybody around the world ain't
messing with, looking for them. Yeah. Well,
but no, I'm saying, but everybody in the world isn't messing with the military like that.
Oh, right.
Right? So they don't care what you're looking for. So I can go and live some different place, and it's fine. But in the show, it's like, not just the military looking for you. You got other active members of the world that can follow you all over the place looking for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the other thing that's happening there, this is all very early in the beginning, is Alina's having these dreams. She's having these nightmares about the fold growing, about seeing the Darkling. She's been having these nightmares for a while, and she realizes at this point that she doesn't think they're dreams, because she sees the Ravkin refugees who are talking about how the fold is growing, and she realizes, I think I'm seeing something that's real.
Yeah. I kind of clock that from the first one. Yeah,
and even in their interaction, like, he can see her, she's talking to him in her nightmare. Yeah. And that's something that I'm curious to see if that will persist, because there's a very similar thing that happens in the books, but it takes her a really, really long time to catch on to the fact that it's real. Like, the entire book.
Of Siege and Storm.
You really don't know until the end that these things that she's seeing are real.
Are they like in between chapters type of thing?
Like, no, like she, because it's in the midst materials? Of her everyday life. She's basically just hallucinating.
Oh, okay. So and then it, why would you not think, yeah, that.
She thinks she's losing her mind.
Because in
because the, again, she.
In the show, she sleeps. So it makes it, you can blur that line of like, maybe she's dreaming. But yeah. if she's in, awake and then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, well, this vision happened. Well, then yeah, you might want to research into that or something.
Nah, she's losing her mind. But so we can, that's where we catch up with Alina and Mal. Their circumstances in the show at this point are very different than the book. And what's also very different from the book every time is the crows. So we get the crows, everybody's favorite. They knew what they were doing, including these characters.
Yeah, they had to.
They knew they what they were to. Doing.
Because I don't know how much I would have been that invested in just a Mal and Alina yep. story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They understood. So we catch up with the crows. They arrive back in Ketterdam, and the Crow Club is no longer.
No.
It is now the Pekka Rollins Club. So Pekka Rollins is the head of the Dime Lions.
Again, sounds derogatory, but I mean, whatever.
Pekka Rollins?
Yeah, and you're just going to keep on going with what, it, I guess.
What's his name?
I get it, but geez.
So they arrive back. They find out the club is no longer their club. Pekka Rollins has taken it over. Kaz has some sort of flashback. There's some sort of flashes of childhood.
I figured that's just how he, like his rough childhood, how he got his illness.
How he became the Bastard of the Barrel.
Because like he was sitting down in the gutters with somebody else that was just coughing up a storm, and then all of a sudden you're on a pile of corpses and you're like,
he's doing fine.
It looked diseased.
He's doing fine.
So I was like, okay, this is he just had a rough childhood.
That's the word for it.
Yeah, just a little rough one.
And after his rough childhood, he's now wanted for murder.
And then it was the murder of
Tanta Helene.
Yes, and she was
the owner, madam who runs the menagerie. Yeah,
of the menagerie, yes.
And I'm trying to think, I don't think she's dead in the books. I don't think she's dead. So that's an interesting turn to take. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. As I mentioned in the Welcome Back episode, it's been 2.5 years since I read Six of Crows. But to my knowledge, she is very much alive.
I would
in Six of Crows.
Think if she's a character in Six of Crows, you said takes place years right, after,
years later.
Then she's got to be alive. Or maybe her death has been faked.
Perhaps. We'll see. So Tanta Helene has been murdered. They're being framed for it. Pekka Rollins has taken over the Crow Club, and because he murdered Tanta Helene, he now owns anything she owned, including the menagerie and including Inej.
And he's a lot fancier looking. I know they showed that.
He is.
Because when I saw him again, I was like, that guy didn't look like he had money. And then it dawned on me. I was like, oh, but he has money.
He does.
Now.
He does. Well, he always had money.
Can we remember how much her price tag is in Inej?
No. I don't know that they ever said, or if it's meant to be one of those that just like, you know, that kind of thing they do in movies where they're like, I'm gonna write a really big number and then I'm gonna slide it across the table to you and you just react like it's a really big number. I don't know if they ever told us how much it is. It's just an astronomical amount of money.
Also, at this point, does she belong to you? She's been gone for a long period of time. Like, to put it frank, your product doesn't make you any money. It's gone out of your hand. Does it, like, it's not worth anything anymore.
Right, but as the owner, as the proprietor, you're not then just going to be like, all right, well, it doesn't matter then. Because how many of your other people are then going to just run away? And they'll be like, if I just run away, he never finds me.
You tighten up is what you do, one. And you make an example of what happens if we do catch you. So you let one escape. You catch her. And then when she comes back, you eviscerate her in front of the other ones.
Maybe that's what they're trying to do. No, because
you're not
going to
do that with the knife queen of every place. Like, it's sometimes you got to cut
that's
your losses.
Their plan.
Sometimes you have to just cut your losses, and there's no real loss because you inherited this. Well, you stole it, but like, there's no real loss. So it's like, who's gonna really? Unless you got like a bunch of customers coming, is Inejian?
I feel like you and I are not. We're not super up and up on how brothel owners run their business.
True.
We don't know.
I have no idea how a brothel is run, but I do know at least how a business is run, and business runs with, you know, product. You know, if it gets away, it's just got away. You're not hunting down, if you worked at GameStop, you're not hunting down the controller.
Well, that's the kind of thing is when they didn't hunt her down across Ravka, but when she came back to town, they're like, yeah, you're coming.
Yeah, you know,
back
I get that. When you come back to town and then immediately disappear, yeah. Like, That should be an indicator right there. It's like, you're not catching her.
So she's Batman.
Yes.
Because they literally corner all three of them, and then they pan over to her, and she's gone.
Yeah, and, like, they only took their eye off for, like, maybe
that's why they call her the Wraith.
Like, to look at
Jesper and Kaz.
Jesper's, like, guns. Like, hey, you know, watch your hands. And then by the time boom, they just look back, yeah, gone. So it's like, I like her mindset of, second you're not looking at me, you'll never see me again.
She's that man.
Yeah.
So yes, they're being framed for murder. They get in the little whatever paddy wagon with all the other people. Yes. Kaz has some more flashbacks. He's clearly having a panic attack.
Yeah, he's
of some kind. He doesn't like
maybe.
Yeah, he doesn't like being in closed spaces. Doesn't like being touched. He's freaking out. Which again is really similar to a scene that happens in Six of Crows. I really want to see like how much we're gonna get into that.
It's just driving these points
home.
Yeah. And then by the time we get Six of Crows, actual series,
worries me is because so the thing that we're not getting into in Six of Crows is the plot, which is great. We're not getting into we're gonna call it the ice heist. The ice heist is like the main plot of Six of Crows. We're not touching that. What worries me is that we are kind of taking a bunch of beats of character development. So all you're going to be left with in Six of Crows is that plot.
That's dope.
And not a ton of character development to move it along.
Dope.
So you're going to end up with just having like, all right, it's like, okay, we're just doing the heist.
You're not
developing these characters
so,
anymore.
Because we've developed them. That's why. And that's to me, that's fine. Because we're developing them now.
But it's the intersection of those two things that makes that work so well. Is you're invested in that plot a lot and you're getting this great character development over and over. Like you're so invested in finding out more even while this is going along. And you're kind of going to lose that a little bit. It's going to be a different experience.
I don't think we will because they're going to be the focal point of this. They're not just going to be like plot all the way through. Because now, would you tell me that? I think it's only going to do one season one.
Because it's two books. So one season will be The Ice Heist. One season will be Crooked Kingdom.
Okay. I thought Crooked Kingdom was the second duology.
No, the second duology of King of Scars.
King of Scars. Okay. We need to just... Part one, part two, part one, part two is what we need to start doing, all right? But, no, I think because if they're, like I said, if they're the focal point of the full thing and we're not going to go back to Mal and, you know, so then, yeah.
I cannot remember their names.
Because they're not as important
as... Alina and Mal.
They're not as important. Let's be honest. I haven't even read the Six of Crows books, and I already know they're the most popular ones.
I think you'd like them.
Yeah, I probably would.
But, it'll be hilarious. This is a total side note because you do audiobooks all the time. As I've mentioned multiple times, Kaz is supposed to be 16, something like that, in Six of Crows, which means at this point in the story, he's about 14 years old. Hilarious.
So that's going to be interesting when that comes out then because he's nowhere near a teenager.
He's not in the book either. Like, he's said to be 16, but this is something that I do often with YA books, and I absolutely had to do with Six of Crows. I change all the ones and their ages to twos. To make it more believable.
Yeah,
because no 16-year-old is doing anything that Kaz Brekker does in those books. But a 26-year-old, it's a little bit more believable.
I mean, maybe
he is. In my head, I just mentally changed that.
I want to know what he does now.
I mean, he's just like this kind of criminal mastermind kind of thing.
Well,
they've
got smart kids. Jeez.
Not like this. But what's funny, to bring it back to you do audiobooks, the audiobook narrator for Kaz has the oldest, graveliest, like, ridiculous voice that you're like, no 16-year-old on the planet sounds like that unless they've been smoking 12 packs a day since they were two.
He was raised in the slums.
I guess. Mm. But to get back to it, so they get in touch with Dreesen. I always forget Dreesen's name. And this is like a way throwback to the guy that originally hired them.
Yeah, that was hard for me to remember until they did like a quick... They did something, or he's mentioned something that
they
I was like,
they did a little,
oh,
like,
okay.
Recap where they're like, you hired us originally for this, da 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
But at this point, Kaz has figured out that he was a middleman.
Yeah.
They're like, somebody else hired you. You are not the person who had this money. Because he's telling them, he's like, it was my boat, it was my money. And Kaz's like, actually, it wasn't. I'm fully aware you're a middleman. Get the hell out. I know this guy to your left, pretending to be a bodyguard, is the real one.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can leave. We're done here. Your time is gone. Let me talk to this guy. And thus we are introduced to Sturmund.
Yes.
Whose name I said wrong for a year.
Well, let's be honest. You said a lot of names wrong.
I did.
Okay.
But I had the U and the R. I called this man Strummond.
You added
for
an
so long.
R
I moved the R somewhere? And the U. So instead of Sturmund, it was Strummond.
Huh.
And now I can't get used to Sturmund sounds so weird. It's so weird.
Just Sturman.
I know, but I've Strumming anyway.
Strumming sounds like so we you're need Sturman. Playing a guitar or something. Like I'm strumming on a six string.
Maybe. No. Maybe that's what he does.
It's stir.
So we meet Sturman. Yes. A pirate, a privateer.
Privateer, get it correct. As he corrects, yes, he's
a very, very important distinction.
Yes.
And then we leave them. They're like, we introduce this guy, and then we're going to leave. We're going to bounce back to Alina and Maul.
Did we automatically?
We did, because that's when we get the only one bed trope.
But is it a trope now? They're in a relationship.
Well, I mean, in general, it's a trope. Here's the thing that's weird about that. The other change from the book is that it's not weird in the book that they're sharing a bed, because they've been sharing a bed for weeks. They slept in the same cabin, and like they're together. Like they've been sleeping in the cabin together on the ship. They've been sleeping in the boarding house together for weeks. Like this is very much, but I guess we're playing up the angst, the tension.
I think this is just like necessary. A return to. I don't know, because like I feel like you're beyond that.
I wish it should be a little bit more comfortable at this point. Yeah,
but whatever.
But you know, they have this nice little moment where they're kind of talking about the things they want to do in the future when they're not fugitives, the places that they want to see, the bits of the world that they never thought that they would get a chance to. And then they're like, well, we're gonna start tracking the Sea Whip soon, and then we'll be able to do all of that.
And we get no information on what the Sea Whip is, right?
Correct. I'm just thinking
Sea Whip. I'm thinking boat.
Okay.
But, like, how is a boat an amplifier?
Who knows?
Like, do you absorb a full boat inside of you, like the antlers? I don't think you
Terrible.
Do.
Terrible. So we jump back to Sturmund. So not only, you kind of got a battle of the wills here, or a battle of the clever.
Wits?
Is that what you wanted to say? Thank you. That's what I was going for.
I got you.
The battle of wits here, because Kaz is feeling all superior because he has recognized that Sturmund is not who he was pretending to be.
Yes.
He is this guy. And Sturmund is like, you're smart, but so am I. I know exactly what these jewels are. These are the queen's jewels that you had. I know this means that you were in contact with Alina. So they're kind of butting heads here.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fun pair. Because these are, again, as happens with most of the things that you're going to see with the crows interacting with other people outside of their circle here, not a character they interact with in these books. Because, again, the crows aren't in this, and Sturmund is kind of just jumping around places. They're kind of throwing this guy wherever they can, because he's a privateer. You can throw him places.
Yeah, okay.
So this is an interesting, I'm interested to see if we get any, where do we go from there? Because Kaz and Sturmund interacting is fun.
But I don't think you'll get any more of that.
Maybe we will, though.
No, because we know from the end of the episode, we won't.
Maybe we will. But Kaz rats her out real quick.
He seems like a type of guy that's like,
he's looking out for number one.
Out of sight, out of mind, too, as well. You put a bunch of money on the table.
Yeah.
I got to worry about my crew and
they
our
do
things.
Try to soften the blow of that a little bit after Sturmund leaves. And he's like, he already knew, like, I wasn't telling him anything he didn't know. He clearly knew. He gave reasons X, Y, and Z why he knew Sturmund already knew. He's like, I didn't tell him anything you knew. I'm like, stop trying to soften the blow. Let him be a little ruthless.
How attached are they to him?
Right. They're not attached at all.
Because during full season one, they were trying to kidnap her. One. Correct. It's not like they spent a whole bunch of one-on-one time with her. It was literally the last episode. That was it.
Yep.
That's not enough time to form this unbreakable bond. She just paid.
I thought it
off.
Was a good moment for Kaz's character. It kind of reminds you a little bit that like he's not, he's not gonna put everything on the line for this person he doesn't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about this person. Like he's looking out for himself and his few people that he has. He does not care about anything else. Do not mistake him for being that kind of character.
Correct.
So it was a good moment for him. And then that's when we find out Jesper's a Durist. We kind of go through that. And then they bounce. They get out.
20 seconds.
The longest 20 seconds in the world.
Yes.
Good Lord. So Alina has another one of her dreams about the Darkling. But now that she's caught on to the fact that they're real, she's talking to him.
Yeah.
And they get their little tete-a-tete, their little head-to-head. And again, this is just like, it literally takes the entire book for her to figure out this is real.
But that's good, though,
right? I mean,
it's
good that we're skipping through all of that.
So then, all right.
But it also, there's a level of, like I said, a lot of Siege and Storm ends up being character study. There's a level of this feeling of Alina who feels like she's losing her mind. Like, she feels like she's going crazy. She feels like she doesn't know what's happening to herself and to anything because she keeps hallucinating these things. She's not telling anybody about it because she doesn't want anybody to know. And so you're kind of inside her head while she's freaking out about it. And you kind of so you're losing a little bit of that, but again, I don't think it's a big loss.
Okay, because I was going to say, how much of a loss is
it? I don't think it is. It's kind of one of those things, you're not really losing anything, but you are changing it.
Okay.
So she's looking, you know, she's looking through maps. They're kind of trying to find the Sea Whip. She very conveniently finds a map.
So that was like another question of mine. In the secret book, is it different? Like, is it a specific map?
No,
that
there's
she
no
finds?
Map.
Oh, there's no map.
There's
okay.
no map.
Okay.
Because one of the things we're also moving away from there is that, so they found the stag because Maul, you know, they went into the woods and Maul is a really good tracker.
Yeah.
So they just tracked the stag. That's the sea stag.
Yes.
So we'll talk about it a little bit more as we get into it, because again, at this point in the book, they're not going for the Sea Whip. They kind of had to make something so that they had a general direction to start in.
Purpose.
What was weird to me about that scene is because it's a light trick where, like, if you hold it up to the light, you can see the Sea Whip on this map. They know where it is. And so she holds it up to the sunlight, can see it, and then is like, okay, let me sneak away and use my light power. You just saw it in the sunlight. Why did you do that?
The thing that's weird is it's a map, not any old, like, special map. It's just one that's in the library.
Yes.
So I'm like, if there's copies of this map anywhere, do they all have that same...
Don't ask too many questions.
Like, that's why I wrote down the question, like, in the book, is it a specific map that she finds? Because seems, like, very convenient.
It's very convenient.
Yes, okay.
But the other thing we get from that moment is that we can see a couple of Rovkin refugees who are arguing. You have one of them who's talking about the Sun Summoner and how she's a saint. She's a living saint.
Yeah.
And the other guy who's like, fuck that. She just got all these people killed. Like, she could have stopped the Darkling. This? It's a great question.
Because... nobody's around.
Nobody survived.
Yeah, nobody survived. So what's all these rumors? Like, how did that get
spread?
Don't
ask too many questions.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that is kind of to me is because, like, this is now spread. There's a full wanted poster looking thing.
That have made it all the way to
Noryuzen.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, like, how is all this? You guys haven't been gone that long, right? Yeah. So... do we got telephones in this world? Do we have...
I mean, it has to have been a pretty significant amount of time because they're sailing, and they first had to sail way south to Ketterdam and then way north to Noryuzen. So if somebody went directly from Oskarvio to Noryuzen, they would have beat them.
Do all the boats in this world propel the same way?
Yes, it's just regular... you can have squallers, like Grisha squallers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The sails.
That's the way to do it.
Like, but that's not really... So Grisha are also contained to the Second Army, at least in Ravka.
Okay.
In Ravka, they're contained to the Second Army. In Fjerda, they're murdered. In Shuhan, they're experimented on.
Yeah.
Noryuzen is the only place that's really safe to be a Grisha. Which
out
is what
the
they,
open. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what that woman talks about when Alina's asking her about the maps, and she shows that she's a Durist. In Noryuzen, the word for Grisha means blessed. Mm-hmm. They don't believe that these people are monsters. They believe it's a blessing to be born with these gifts. It's the only place like that.
As it should be.
As we're aware of.
Yes, as it should be.
And even in Ketterdam or in Kirch, they're just kidnapped and sold as slaves.
Okay.
So, I don't know where my point was going there, but... Yes.
No, I was just talking about how the ships.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like everybody's
just, like,
got
charter.
One.
Yeah, there's not just like a squaller that's out there like I'm out for hire, like you can hire me to move your ship.
Which would be the smartest thing.
Would be the smart thing.
Yeah.
And yet.
Because like that cuts down travel time because you don't have to wait for the wind to blow your way. You're always going, you know, with the wind. So
it's really just the Rovkin military that has access to things like that. So and I mean, I guess if the Rovkin military was the one that was, you know, getting these posters out there. Yeah, maybe that is them.
But I do like the fact that we see how the rest of the world is treating the Rovkin military. Like, they seem to be, like, just know you're a guest.
Yes.
Everywhere you're at. Like, your conflict over there is your conflict over there.
We're not part of that.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
don't care about
don't
it.
Don't believe that we believe the way you believe over here.
Like, yeah, so Maul is recognized by, again, we're kind of leaning into the convenience factor, the things that we're changing
very
in
convenient.
This.
Because what is that troop, what is that specific troop or company doing there that he escaped from? Why are
and
they
who, why
there?
Does he recognize every soldier he's ever
There's
trained
no way.
With? No.
You can recognize every squad member you were with. That's maybe 8 people, but your whole platoon?
Yeah.
No, bro.
So he happens to physically run into his old commander, who recognizes him, and because Maul has deserted, that's execution.
Yeah, no, that's...
So they're like, we're going to take you back, we're going to court-martial you.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that he even said they're going to court-martial him is kind of nice. They're just going to kill him.
Yeah,
they're just going to execute him for being a deserter. So he starts running. They have, you know, you have this nice little parkour moment, very fun little chase scene. Love to see it. He and Alina meet up because she's also running because she got recognized from a wanted poster. Again, very convenient. We're all just going to be running to the same place at the same time. But you do get that moment where the Zemini people protect them.
Yes.
Which was nice.
I don't know what her powers are specifically, though.
Her light powers?
Yeah. Are they just light? Does she get to, because she accidentally burnt the map.
It's light and heat.
Okay.
So she can burn things.
So then why didn't she just burn all of them?
She doesn't want to.
Okay.
She so let's just flashlight.
Let's just do a security guard. Yeah, I see you.
One of the things that she often does is that she'll just blind people.
Okay.
So she'll blind people so you can't aim. You can't, you know, you're kind of
start
off your
bearing.
Yeah, flashbang, which is what she did. What was weird to me was that Maul was in the same place, but we're supposed to, anyway, it's fine. It's
because they've been intimate. Uh-huh. He's kind of a little less susceptible to her powers, so.
But, so perks. Yeah, the Zemini people kind of, they literally close ranks around them, protect them, let them get away. They've got this like salute, this very,
I thought Hunger maybe Games-esque. That was something that like some secret organization or whatever.
That not is that
like,
I know of.
Okay.
So, I'm assuming it's just like a cultural thing.
But it makes sense. You people treat Grisha like they're some, you
like
know.
They're people.
Yeah. We, like this is a blessing to us. And we just saw somebody that is the rarest of the rare, right?
Yes.
So then, yeah, no, she's above everything, right? Or, like, she's to be protected, not hunted down and, you know.
Right.
Okay.
So, I like the idea, for all of that, I like the idea of moving this all into Novia Zem. I think that was a good change.
Is Jasper?
Jesper?
Jesper from Novia Zem?
Trying to decide if I...
Want to tell me the
want
truth?
Want to tell you the truth.
Wow.
Because I know the answer to that question, because I know where he's from. I don't think I'm going to say anything yet.
Only because I'm just putting black in black.
That's
all I'm doing. Because
I can see that.
It seems like this is where black people are from. Jesper happens to be.
Wow.
At least
I
mixed.
Don't see color, Aaron.
Oh, well, you should. Because that whole country, which I appreciated all the different colors. And that's why I was like, this is a Caribbean place. Is it like explained that way in the book? That's why I'm like, this is pretty cool. They put her, it brought it to life.
Yeah.
But if you say they don't even go there, that's kind of. Whack Arnold's then.
Yeah, like, you know about Novia Zem. You hear a good amount about it, but you never actually physically go there.
Hmm. Seems like they would have good food there. Just saying.
This is a callback to a conversation Aaron and I have been having about the food in Shadow and Bone.
Yes, or the lack of actual
it's
food.
It's Eastern European. It's not your taste.
Get better food. Get
anyway,
better food.
So cutting back to our crows, they're kind of all, they've all met back up after everything happened. But Kaz tries to get Inej to leave. He's like, this is not a good place for you. Here's a bunch of money. Go find Alina. Go protect her. Like, get the fuck out.
This is his way, though, because I know they have their thing together. Mm. This is his way of protecting her.
Right.
Though.
He's trying to get
this
her
is
out.
The only way. This is what he knows.
But she won't leave.
Well, yeah. I knew she wasn't. Honestly, I knew she wasn't. Because I was like, that would just put her directly back into the story of Mal and Alina. No, we're not doing that. We're not going to. We're going to keep them together somehow. And yeah, that's what that was. And it's also another way to not just protect her, but to, again, like you said, soften on Kaz, because he's like, I ratted her out, quote unquote, but now I'm going to go send somebody to protect her, basically.
Right.
But see, so he still cares. But
he's a complicated young man.
Yeah, he's not young. The guy is 67 years old, and he's walking with a cane, not because of disease, because of age is what
good
it is.
Good Lord. So there, Kaz clearly has a plan. He still needs a heart render, as he says.
Which we don't know yet why.
We don't know why. We have no idea why.
Still
he just
a season
keeps saying,
one type of thing. That,
yeah, I need a heart render.
Yeah, but nothing.
Luckily, we know one. And Pekka Rollins, to up the ante on getting Kaz, kills one of the Stad Watch, kills one of the cops.
Yeah, yeah.
And is like, we're going to frame this guy for it.
Which, if I'm the police officer and you're going to the cabinet to pull out a gun... I know what's going on. Like, I would have instantly been like, shoot him now, guys. Everyone shoot him. Like,
nobody
what are we doing?
Shoots Pekka Rollins.
Nah.
Big boss.
Also, why he must be paying them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're in his pocket.
It doesn't work that way.
It does here.
No, here's the thing. I pay the police. They do my bidding. They come back. They failed from doing my bidding. I kill one of them. The entire police force is on me.
Unless they all need your money.
Unless they all need... Why they didn't need my money before.
Yeah, they did. They were poor before.
I don't understand how they go from, but like, it's poor, I'm not dying, or I could possibly die now because you've broken that trust.
But you have money.
But you've broken that trust. I can't even trust my life if I mess up a little. Like,
yes.
Yeah, see, no. I go back to my other gang, the police force.
No.
And we're bigger than you. We can just come down on you. That's how. But that
who's
works.
The we in that scenario? Because that necessitates everybody leaving, and they're not doing that because they all want the money.
How many people are in there? I thought he just like picked up the stragglers that are like hurting.
No,
bad
he basically has the entire stat watch paid off.
Oh, okay, because like I'm like if
he
you
essentially
just,
owns the police.
Well, I mean, I still say it doesn't work that way. The police would just be like, "We're the bigger gang. We're the bigger gang."
But in the midst, so we've got yet another, you know, kind of we're upping the ante on Kaz getting caught, and we meet another young man playing the flute in a gutter for some reason for some coins.
Yeah. You got excited for that one?
I mean, I like the character. I was, okay. I'm just curious. I was like, that was an interesting, but so he, you know, that was an interesting intro too, because he's busking, I believe is the right word, but I feel like I could be wrong.
Begging. It's,
wow.
That's what it's called.
So he's playing. He gets approached by some nefarious figures.
Yeah, street thugs.
And then it just cuts to him going back.
Yeah, he killed them all.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what I pulled from it.
That's
is
what you
like
pulled from
he's
that?
He's so dope that he
Good
just
Lord.
Killed everybody.
So like, this is Wylan because Kaz walks in after him, and Kaz and Wylan already know each other, which is an interesting choice to have made.
So that's why I think he's on the six.
So we've got Wylan, who has this little lab full of all his little potions and his tinctures and his things. Don't touch that. You're going to be itchy. And Wylan is going to be their demolitions expert.
So I don't understand why Wylan is poor.
That's a great question. If you're looking at this lab he has with all of these things, and he's like, when's the last time you ate? What the fuck do you mean? Sell some of these.
Unless he meant, like, when's the last time you ate because you've been so buried in work here.
I mean, maybe.
You know.
But I think it's implied. I mean, it's a money thing. It's implied.
Yeah,
that's
the only
issue.
Reason. Yeah, that's why I was like, "How is he poor? He's got a menagerie of."
The menagerie is a brothel of children.
We do not know that yet,
because
we have not seen any children characters.
Wow. So yeah, he and Kaz already know each other. Kaz talks about the little darkness bombs, his little powder bombs that he was throwing, and he implies that Wylan is the one that made them. So they have this working history, and he's like, I need you now. We cut to Inej getting cornered, and Nina comes up. This was the scene that I didn't super love because I assumed Inej meant to get caught.
Well, I don't know if she assumed or she meant to get caught.
I don't think she did either once the scene plays out.
I think when she got caught and she stated, well, you guys can't kill me. Well, if you can't kill me, so that takes me dying off the board, but not for me killing all of you. So, like, in a fight, you're at disadvantage because I can go all out. You have to restrain yourself because you can't kill me.
Correct.
So that's what I took from that because...
So that, I mean, the whole scene of, like, her getting ready to fight, I totally get it. It was the idea that she even got caught in the first place when earlier in the episode we had just seen that if she doesn't want to be seen, she won't be. If she wants to escape, she will. So I was looking, I was like, how the fuck did she just get caught? That was just an interesting thing. But it provided the opportunity that they needed to introduce Nina, get her in to take out the guards that are around her. Taking out like seven dudes at once is really impressive.
And that one you can't even see.
One that you can't even see. Like that is,
yeah.
The show doesn't really go into how wildly impressive it is to take on that many people at once as a Heartrender. That was ridiculous.
I mean, we've seen it before, kind of.
We have. They kind of play around with that in the show a lot. Like, it happened in the final episode.
Yeah,
in
the book. I mean, a boat.
Yeah, on the boat.
She drops, or that dude drops a bunch of people. Yeah.
This is a much bigger power. Because it's not that you can't target that many people at once.
Difficult.
It's just a lot harder.
Yeah, okay.
So, Nina needs help with Hellgate. She's like, I can help you. You can help me. I need help with Hellgate. We cut to Matthias for just half a second to see him getting into Hellgate.
That's all we got from him the whole time.
Blood on the floor, guy getting a tattoo that says murderer.
Yeah.
Screaming, nobody likes this place. Oh my God, it's so bad.
He looked very starved.
Very. He was looking a little, he wasn't looking skinny, he was looking
cut.
Lean.
That's what he, yeah.
Yeah, he was looking lean.
That's the actor. He's like, if I'm going to be shirtless this one too, I'm going to lean up a little bit.
And you know what? Good for him. Good for him. So as we come to the end, Alina and we were introduced vaguely to characters who we don't get a name for. Those two people with the axes and the sword.
They got a very
intense intro for the two of them. We're like,
I did think they were from the South.
The South.
Or is it from the North? Wherever the Asian thing.
The Shuhan, yes. Yeah, the South.
Shuhan, South. Yeah, so yeah. So
they
I
are. They're Shu.
Okay, but later we kind of get a little more information on them.
Yeah.
But I thought that was the introduction of, okay, now we're introducing Shu soldiers, is what I thought.
So we got these really, really intense intros for these two people whose names we don't even get.
Yeah, not at
we
all.
We don't know who they are.
Yeah.
But we get a very fun, very intense intro for these two characters who are, you know, they're talking about, should we go to a bar? Should I recite some poetry? Mm-hmm. Should I, you know, dangerous, important. So they're just people that we're clearly going to come back to. These are not a one-off. And we meet them again because Alina and Maul, at the end of the episode, find a private ship. They realize the docks for this harbor city are almost empty, which is bizarre. But one that's left behind is a private ship that they can charter their way onto. So she is using a gold hairpin, which is from the book. That's how they paid their way up to this point, is when she escaped from the fold, she was still in all of her, like, regalia. So she's been selling these gold hairpins to get them across the world.
Okay.
So she turns over a gold hairpin, is like, get me on the ship. It's those two soldiers that we had met previously. And at that point, the First Army of Ravka tries to come and grab Maul, and they're like, fuck you, we're not part of your army.
They have a tracer on Maul, because they just run into
him. How did they find him?
All over the place.
What are they doing there?
He had a different hat this time. You know, she had a different coat. How do you
find
him?
She had a nice little shawl.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. Yes. So, I'm interested in those two. I thought maybe they were going to be the next six, you know, to round out this odd number that we have. What keeps happening in my head is the numbers keep going off. So like, now we're at seven, so they can't be. So maybe this person dies. Wait, but now we're back at five. So wait, who's going to be in this six? All I know is that there's six, but I think at the time...
What if it's a misnomer?
No, it's not a misnomer. I would not like the book. If by the end there are like 12 of these people,
the
they're still calling them
crew
six.
Is actually like eight people.
Yeah, no. That's like the Fantastic Four, but there's five of them. Actually, no, there are six of them, which is stupid.
There you go.
Because they have a son and
daughter. There's precedent.
That's dumb. But anyway, you know why? Because I think I look at anybody that's any type of eccentric or like fringe-looking character.
As being part of them.
As being part of the six. So I'm like,
Your options here were what? Sturmund, Weiland,
yep.
These two new characters.
But then I'm also trying to gender balance this as well, too. So when the two Shu were introduced, I was like, we got too many dudes on the squad. He's probably going to die or something to, like, balance everything out. Because then we'll have Inej. We'll have, you know, what's the guy in jail?
Matthias.
I'm like, he's got to be on the team, too, right?
I don't know.
Because he's got the connection with her.
I don't know.
So how do you...
I do know.
I'm like, the numbers are off somewhere here. The numbers are off. So, but yeah, I want to see more of those two characters if we ever get their names.
So they very, very nicely protect Maul and Alina getting onto the ship.
Let's be honest. It's money.
It is.
Like, they just paid in gold. Yes. You're trying to take something that could potentially be more gold, one, you know, which we'll find out, yes, and, you know, when they...
Because even the army general or commander, whatever the fuck his rank is, mentions them being Shu. He's like, you know, you're Shu Han soldiers. And they're like, actually, no.
Yeah.
We're independent.
We're Shu only in race.
Yeah.
But
nationality.
Not in, yeah, nationality, I would say, yeah.
So we flip back before we end up on the ship again. We flip back and we see Grisha relations have gotten much worse since what happened on the fold.
Which, understand, that's how prejudice works.
Yes.
Just blame it right on the...
On all of
them. Yeah, on all of you guys.
So we cut to a bunch of Grisha in cages about to be essentially fed to the fold, it seems like, including Genya.
First of all...
Her name is Genya.
First of all,
I refuse to say Genya.
You previously just said you get names wrong in this story.
I refuse.
So Hard J. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going with. I didn't recognize her when I first saw her, though.
I know, because
she's beat up. She's looking beat up, you know.
Her hair, I wonder if it was purposeful or if it was just a matter of the coloring. So she's a redhead because she
makes it
tailors
that way.
It herself. Yeah, yeah. And so she keeps it up every few days. And so if she doesn't, then her hair is going to look, you know, less red. Mm. So, and she's not in her, we saw her basically wearing the same thing the entirety of season one. And they've taken her out of that color completely.
She looks very haggard.
She does.
Now. And
she's still beautiful, still gorgeous.
Yeah. I just thought I was trying to place her face the whole time until she said, I'm a healer.
You recognize? You'd be like, why does she look like Giles from Buffy?
That's terrible.
That's her father.
That's also terrible. That's
Anthony Head is her father.
Because he's in Ted Lasso.
Is he really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
He's in Ted Lasso.
I just saw him do a performance of Sweet Transvestite from Rocky Horror. Mm-hmm. Didn't know he did that. Fantastic.
Mm.
But anyway, she's in a cage.
Okay. I didn't realize that's crazy, dude, because you said it, and I was like, she does.
Next time you look at her, you're going
to
be like,
that's crazy. I don't want to now. I don't want to now.
She's very pretty. So she's in a cage. They're kind of, you know, these first army guys, these Otkazitsiya, these normal people, quote unquote normal people, are naming off these crimes that they think that have been done, like poisoning the king, which Genya very much did do, but it's fine.
I mean, so are they actually wrong?
She had a reason. She should have.
Does she have a reason? Because we didn't get a clear cut.
Oh my God. Because you and I were talking about this last night. Yes. They need to be a little bit more clear about what he was doing to her.
It was just late night touch ups to his beard. And
I am curious if we're going to get, if they're going to mention more of that.
I don't think we are. I think that plot line is done. I think that. That's wrapped up. We'll She's see. On the bat. You know what? Because, wait, is he dead?
Is who dead? The king?
The king. No. Yeah, he just got ill?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't know what happens, but unless she, like, has another direct, because let's face it, she's on the bad guy side.
Right.
So, if he makes his way to the king's doorstep and plays off of that hatred that she has for him, which very much... It's kind of like you got two strikes against you already. You hate our people. You did all these terrible things to me. I'm following this guy who, you know, I'm on his side, you know. So I can very much, okay, I can see the storyline plopping back up and then her having a rage-filled, I'm going to kill the king moment type of thing.
As she should.
I have the power.
Good for her.
Situation.
So, right as things are getting going, one of the soldiers gets beheaded.
Yes.
There's a skirmish. These
you
new
really
monsters.
Call it beheaded? Because it was kind of under the nose.
Well, because here's the thing. His head is gone, but then when they toss his head back out, the jaw is missing.
The jaw is missing. Yeah, so I'm like.
Did they eat the jaw? Maybe the jaw is just
meat. I thought he just got cut up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Darkling has like. Cut. Yeah, he has like dark blades type of thing. So I thought he was just cutting people. What?
It's called The Cut.
Is it really?
It's just called The Cut, capital C.
Okay. It's blades. It's dark blades. Whatever.
So we get this little skirmish. The soldiers are very much like, the Volcra can't leave the fold. What's happening? They're not Volcra. It's whatever monsters he's created. So he kills all the soldiers. He frees all the Grisha. And he's like, I'm going to go into town and do the same thing.
Did he create these monsters? Or did they already exist and now he just controls them?
It's a great question. We don't really know. All we see is that they then recede into nothingness around him.
They just went into his cape.
Yeah, basically. That's where they hide. That's where they live. It's a little, nice little place for them to be. and so he's like, I'm going to go into town and do the same thing. You're welcome to follow me, or you're welcome to come with me. So they go with him, and Genya accepts his hand. And he talks to them the same way that he talks to his creatures. It's that last scene in season one where he just looks at them and says, follow. Yeah. And he looks at the Grisha and he says, follow.
Let's be honest. They are his creatures.
They pretty much are at this
point.
And
it's a proper motivation now to join his army.
Yeah, now that the Grisha relations are so much worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, whose fault is that, my guy?
I don't know. The sun woman?
So we're wrapping up the episode. We get one last look at the crows. We've got, who's in this now? Jesper, Kaz, Inej, Nina is with them now, and Wylan. So they're all looking out at the city, And Kaz says he needs a heart render for the aftermath. And then there's an explosion. Yes. And he has demoed the Crow Club.
Yes. He said brick by brick. And then all of a sudden...
took it down.
Yeah.
So we'll see what goes with that. And then we find out that the ship that Alina and Maul have gotten onto belongs to Sturmund.
Yes.
Unfortunate.
Not really, because he doesn't seem like he's a terrible... he seems he's a profiteer.
Yes.
So that means you're just in it for the money.
Who's paying for Alina and Maul?
I mean, who isn't at this point?
The Fjerdans. It's the Fjerdans who are putting a $20 million bounty.
It could also be, you know, what's his name? I'm already forgetting the guy's name.
Why are you bad with names? Pecker Rollins?
Pecker, yes.
Yes. Stop calling him that. Not with the hard R like that.
I'm sorry. See, Pekka, would you rather I say that? So...
a very strong first episode.
Yeah, no, I actually really enjoyed this first episode. It was a nice introduction back to everything. Like I said, I like the new characters that they introduce, and I like the expansions on the old characters that we have. So...
I don't know where we're going in a lot of this.
That's a good thing.
It is. It's very interesting for me, especially, I think it's better for me because I didn't like the book, so I'm not going to be butthurt that we're changing a bunch of things because I didn't fucking like the book.
Well, see, I think now, because the bar is so low for you,
it's very low,
that everything else is golden.
Yeah.
So we're good. And we have 5 of the 6.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're just, now it's just who's going to be the 6. That's who it is. It's going to be Pekka Rollins.
Pekka Rollins it could the 6 be. Of Crows.
It could be.
What a twist.
Turn an enemy into a friend. Or that kind of, I don't know, are they an enemy the whole time? They're on the team. Mm. Keep your enemies closer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I do.
Bit of an age gap in there.
I mean, there's an age gap with the actors, though. You said you're supposed to be 16 or something, right? And
they've clearly changed that.
Yeah, so then they clearly can change the age. That's fine. You know, that's fine. But the one line before we go, because after the explosion goes off and he's like, it belongs to the bastards or whatever.
The bastards.
Like, that's missed opportunity to be like, it belongs to the crows to show a little unity here, bro. Like,
no,
what's up with this bastards. All about you, you know?
Because he's the bastard of the barrel.
Yeah, but we're not. I know my parents.
It's about Kaz. It's the Kaz
like,
show.
Like, what if they're like, I had known my mom and dad. What is this? Like,
where are any of their parents? They're all supposed to be 14 right now. Where are any of their parents?
I don't know where Jesper's from. So I don't know what his, he could just be out there chilling and his parents are back in the Caribbeans chilling too. So I don't know. Inej,
I just remembered
yes.
his backstory.
Inej, okay, I understand. She's definitely. Nina, I don't remember if Nina left on her own, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, her parents are cool and chilling too. And then I don't know anything about Weiland. So as far as I know, his parents are alive and chilling as well. So I think you're the only one, Kaz. Let's, you know, this is more about us. There's no I in team. You know?
But there isn't Kaz.
No. What?
Yes.
How do you spell Kaz?
Yep.
Where's an I?
Don't worry about it.
Exactly. I think spelling is top priority for the crows if there's an I in Kaz.
You ready to watch episode 2?
Yes.
We're going to go watch episode 2 and we'll be back.